ready to go. Let's start one of the absolute weirdest episodes of Audio Face we've ever done.
Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
This is episode 182, Flawless. Today we've got two singles because we actually have music for you guys on last week.
Yes. Thank you, music gods.
Please, gods. Yes. We'll get to those singles in a little bit. And then we've got three albums to review this fine
week,
day,
yeah.
Time, and
we
earth.
We have Roadrunner.
Yes, Roadrunner, New Light, New Machine by Brockhampton. We have Alive by Kid Ink, and we have 97 Blossom by The Blossom.
Yes, lots of albums, a lot of interesting news to get to, especially that happened this week. But let's start things off with the singles.
Yeah, so we have Waves of Blue by My G Jordan. They're a little R&B, even though we don't like R&B.
Neo-pop, let's
say. Yeah, neo-pop duo. Released a single earlier this week, and it's fun. It reminded me a little bit of like a mix of, say, Anderson .Paak and The Weeknd style.
Yeah.
Kind of playful tone, so they're deep voice blues.
But I also kind of felt like a little bit of a chill wave kind of aspect to the production as well. Kind of.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not too far of a stretch to say that. Yeah.
The genre in question here takes a lot of different forms and sounds a lot of different ways.
Yes.
Like we've talked about how this year especially, there are a lot of artists who are doing like neo-pop things, but it sounds very indie. As opposed to older, like traditional neo-pop. And by traditional neo-pop, I mean like from the late 2010s, which sounds very trappy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So now you're seeing that shift in the paradigm of neo-pop into this more experimental indie side, which I am all for personally, you know, as an indie head. But it's a good track. I like it. Do you know if they're releasing an album this year?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, but okay. I would not be surprised. That's how these things go.
I'd be down as that goes. So.
Yeah.
And then we've got... a dual single of Garden, a little two singles from Dinosaur Jr. And this is their first released work in a few years now. So they're really popular in the 90s, had some good albums here there, and they had some random stuff in the 2000s. Don't make it harder, hand me a hand. Your turn, boy. Where is the garden? But both of them are pretty solid rock tunes and stuff. Nothing too special. One of them, I think, is I Ran Array, which is the acoustic piece, I believe, is actually very, very good. I like it. It's throwing it back to like that 90s sound, but updating it a little bit more so it doesn't sound too drowned out. Because we've had last year, we had a lot of revivals of like older rock bands from the 70s and 80s making new music, which some were very, very good, and some were kind of lackluster in the back end. So he's got like Psychedelic Furs and a few others that made good albums. So... but I know Dinosaur Jr. are making an album this year, and I'm looking forward to it. But I like both singles.
Yeah, I liked Garden quite a bit. It definitely harkens back to this 90s era of alternative rock. And maybe that's like mine of my critique that maybe it's... we'll have to see the rest of the album.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How much of an evolution is it? Because we've had cases where these older bands come back and they aren't able to push it forward as much as we'd like them to. And then we've had cases where they are.
Yes.
So... we can never judge an album by just one or two singles.
But those two singles are good. We now want to see more and see what the entire LP is in its entirety.
For sure. Yeah. So I'll get into plugs right now.
Plug.
Yes. So a lot of Audio Face things, a lot of other things that are moving parts, changing around more than usual in this plugs part. So pay close attention. First of all, our playlist 2021 AF It is available and on right now on Spotify. You can get it in the podcast description or the video description. We are going to update that weekly with songs and things like that that we like. Follow Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram to keep in contact with us as we're doing the show. And to just give us feedback. Make sure we're like doing it right. Send us new music to listen to, etc. Bonus episodes. We've got a bonus episode coming up later this week on Caro Caro Bonito, where I talked to one of my friends about that. Caro Caro Bonito is going to be coming out with some new music and EP later this month, so we'll be ready for that as we usually are. And also check out our past bonus episodes, totally free, on Daft Punk, MF Doom, and the State of Music 2021, where we assess.
And I'm proud of all three of them.
Yeah, they're all very good episodes. We're proud of a lot of our episodes this year. On to politics, there's Power Report. There's the panel episode that we did last week with featuring the Derek Chauvin trial. We talked about some right-wingers like Stephen Crowder, Matt Gaetz, World News, more. It's such a fire show. I love it. Naturally, of course, I'm talking about it. But check it out at powerreport.world, available wherever you get podcasts. And especially if you can find Audio Face as a podcast, you can find Power Report as a podcast. If you can find Audio Face on video on YouTube, then it's also on YouTube. Power Report's on YouTube at youtube.com/DanFromTheInternet. And my Twitch stream, Thank Dan It's Friday. Source stream is going on like a half month break thing. So from basically the next 2-3 Fridays or so in April, I won't be having a show. But obviously I'll still be doing many more shows. There's Audio Face, there's Power Report, all that stuff. And TDIF is set to return the first Friday of May, which I want to say is like the 9th or something. It's probably earlier than that, but I'm not top of my head. And so make sure you check that out and follow me at Dan from the Web on Twitter for all of those things. And lastly, a new thing. I've been meaning to do this for a while. This audio for this episode and other episodes in Syndicate 23 Networks, it is Power Report, has been mastered by Dead Music Productions. You can follow them on Instagram at deadmusic666. That's deadmusic666 on Insta. That's all the plugs. We got a lot of exciting things coming up on Audio Face. So let's get into the news.
Yeah, so before we get into kind of our normal news stories, we have some personal things that we need to talk about first before we get started. So I'll let Dan take the wheel on this one.
Yes, thank you. So as we've done almost every Monday since May 2017, we released episode 91 of Audio Face on April 8th, 2019. Among several other artists mentioned in that episode, it was a music recommendations episode, Sean recommended Bane's World, which is a band from the Los Angeles area led by frontman Shane Blanchard. We mentioned attending the same high school as Shane and expressed interest in inviting him on the podcast to talk shop with an up-and-coming musician from our neck of the woods. More than a year later, in the summer of 2020, numerous women and non-binary individuals bravely came forward about their negative experiences with men in the LA indie scene. Some of these individuals were under the age of 18 when these events allegedly took place. Their raw stories detailed the all-too-familiar cycles of predation, coercion, violence, and intimidation that fueled post-traumatic stress within millions of sexual violence survivors worldwide. Shane was named as an alleged perpetrator in several of these accounts. In light of Sean and I's social media feeds being saturated with these harrowing descriptions, some coming from our former classmates, we made the decision to report on the allegations in a news portion of an upcoming podcast episode. Not only did this story hit very close to home for us, but it also highlighted one of Audio Face's key editorial values. We started the podcast in response to a major critique of traditional music media that it too often turns a blind eye to the dangerous behavior of musicians, threatening fans' safety as a consequence of that silence. It would be a betrayal of our values to have recommended an artist to our audience without telling them the full story. So our segment reporting on the allegations was part of Audio Face episode 151, which was released on the 27th of July, 2020. So in the 8 months since, Shane and his associates have reached out to us on multiple occasions. In one instance, a request was made on Shane's behalf for an opportunity to appear on Audio Face as a guest to give his side of the story. Despite our explicit and recorded desire to invite him on the show more than a year earlier, we declined, citing Audio Face's founding principles and our lack of desire to aid in laundering his image. We suggested that it would be best if Shane's actions going forward speak for themselves. Last week, 3 months after that request was sent, Shane poorly chose to threaten us with legal action unless we pulled the segment from our YouTube channel, claiming our reporting on both the allegations and his response to them were defamatory. The statements made about Shane Blanchard and Bane's World on the Audio Face podcast are fully protected by the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and further bolstered by California state law. As such, we reject Shane's demand to remove any Audio Face content on any platform pertaining to his allegations. We reject this threat not only in accordance with our rights, but to use our privilege to shine a light on some of the intimidation tactics used behind the scenes against people who speak out against injustice. We doubt that we're the first people that he has attempted to bully in this crusade to scrub references to these allegations from the internet. And so, in observation of April as Sexual Violence Awareness Month, we hope that this incident emphasizes how we must unite to support survivors, to deter people from perpetuating sexual violence, and to empower fans of music everywhere to speak their truth. And that's pretty much all we've got to say on that.
Yeah. And
moving on
to
the other, like, I guess, sad story of the music industry. So we talked last week on the episode about DMX being rushed to the hospital in grave condition from an apparent drug overdose. There was not a lot of activity in his brain as the week sort of developed. There were some early rumors that jumped on saying like, oh, DMX is dead. No, DMX is not dead. And the family just kind of wanted peace and patience by the end of the week. By Thursday, many of DMX's organs were failing and it just wasn't looking good. So it looked like on Friday, sort of like the call was made from the family and DMX was pronounced dead at the age of 50. Now, DMX born Earl Simmons, he's like, I mean, like to say he's a legend is
understatement.
A huge understatement. He came up at in rap at a time when it was just kind of coming from its like late 80s, early 90s, sort of like fun dancing around kind of thing to something that was getting more gritty and more raw. And while a lot of it was pertaining towards, you know, we had NWA with like F the Police and those kind of like political statements with some other sort of like gang banging sort of like rap stuff that was starting to take place. You also had DMX who stood kind of in the middle of all this, who in addition to rapping about some really intense, deep stuff, was also using rap as an opportunity to discuss like serious demons in his life. One of those included drug addiction.
Yes. So it's unfortunately another thing where it's not the first time we've reported an overdose killing an amazing, talented artist. It's really sad to hear and shit, man, he's an amazing, amazing artist.
Yeah, a couple of things that have been said. There have been, of course, like artists that come forward. Demi Lovato, who has been recently talking a lot about
like her addiction and stuff and other things,
remarked that easily could have been her. And I think some people were trying to say, like, oh, you're trying to make this about you. And like, no, we've just been talking about like overdosing and like
and how common it is in the music industry and how common it is for artists to go overboard. I mean, so almost any big musical artist you can think of has had ties in with drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, some type of substance abuse that has at some point or another become an addiction for, I'd say, 80% of the top musicians in the world. It's really bad and prevalent in there.
Being in the public eye doesn't help that much.
No.
Let's add the layers that DMX, like the way he grew up from a class way, from a race way, was like extra targeted, went through jail multiple bouts of times and like had to rediscover himself. He got closer with religion and Christianity through a lot of these things. And had bouts where he was like off of drugs and starting to work more on different things. It seems like the past couple of years was one of those things. Like he had gone to jail for tax evasion, something we talked about in a super early on this episode.
I remember that.
And then, you know, had served all that, gone forward, and it seemed like he was setting his life up for a new way. And kind of similarly with Doom this year, it seemed like the world was there to like continue and like sunset their musical career and just like continue to have an influence on a lot of other musicians. But like at the age of 50, no more. It's absolutely very sad, but definitely not just like the hard like bangers like Up in Here. Another thing I'll mention that someone else was saying, Party Up is like, it's amazing that song got played at middle school dances.
I didn't know that, but that's hilarious.
Like, it was a point that was being made by like a lot of different hosts talking about music that like it was weird to have a like, I think the point being made maybe by like Micah Peters, I want to say, from Complex, was that DMX shouldn't have existed. He shouldn't have had like the cultural acclaim that he had, because like you said, like
he's wild.
some of the lyrics to Party Up, like listen, your ass is about to be missing. You know he's gonna find you some old man fishing. That's happening at like a dance, like a middle school
dance.
Some
awkward middle schoolers are just like, yeah, it's a Maynard.
Yeah, like it's like it is. He packs so much energy into his music and his rap at a time when you know rap still was packed full of that energy, but a lot of times it was like being pigeonholed in these different categories. DMX was painting a different path for himself, and he continued to do. So it's definitely like a big loss from the music definitely community. Is. Moving on to our first album of the week. We have
Roadrunner, New Light, New Machine by Brockhampton. It is 13 songs, 46 minutes long.
Yes, this is Brockhampton's first album since Ginger, which came out in 2019, which was largely considered to be by Brockhampton fans and critics as like Brockhampton's best album.
I think Ginger was okay. I liked it a lot more than like Saturation Tune 3 and some other work that they had. Because with Brockhampton, you have some interesting scenes throughout their work where some of it can be very experimental, some of it could be good, some of it could just be really out there within there. Because it's a huge group.
Yeah, an issue with Brockhampton has always been, let alone the personnel issues, like the size in which the band is and taking all of those creative elements that are in the band and making them sound cohesive. Yes. Which, like, they struggled very openly with their first kind of projects, but I think in their later years, they're starting to kind of get things to be a lot more focused. This album, I would also say, is their most focused project to date. It starts off with Buzzcut featuring Danny Brown, which we talked about as a new single maybe a couple weeks ago. Still blaring, still very good, has a really cool beat to go along with it. It's a really nice intro song. I do like and enjoy when artists decide to use the lead single as the first song to intro an album because it says a lot.
It shows the confidence that they have of showing that, hey, this is just a teaser. The single is just a teaser. We have so much more substance within the album. This just sinks you in. Now here's the rest of it to really get you through it. I love that as well. I really, really like Buzzcut a lot. It's an amazing track. After that, you have Chain On with featuring JPEG Mafia, and that's also a fantastic track.
Yeah.
Did you live up to it? Is you doing the minimum? Used to get 50 views, now they need Peggy's momentum. Let's check the addendum. Switch the code, I'm speaking prophecies like that's a raven. Ball headed with lil status, I feel like Maven. But I be dressed like Raven. Up in the studio slaving. Wonder how Peggy be wait. Wonder how Peggy be caking. I be easy baking. My oven stay prepped and ready for the heat to take it. Niggas done took this road and failed, they ain't have proper placement. Some of you niggas don't look well, this Peggy make you hate him. Is that how I make the beast sound like
this Brockhampton album kind of continuing, well, actually not really with Ginger, but like it has more collaborators, outside collaborators, than I'm used to seeing in a lot of Brockhampton albums, at least for a little while from my memory. And I don't hate any of these features.
They did one of the rare things, which is, you know, be a giant super group and then have a bunch of pretty big name features and all sound cohesive. Make everything not stick out necessarily. Like, example, you have Chain On with JPEG Mafia. You have Bankroth, ASAP Rocky, and ASAP Ferg. And none of those, I love those as well. We'll get to that in a second. But they don't outshine one another. Because that's what tends to happen with a lot of features. Usually, like, say Drake will have 21 Savage on a track or whatever it is. And that will outshine the rest of the work or the rest of the features. This one, none of that happens.
And to go back to like the point about singles and outshining, usually the single on an album is like what outshines the whole album. But by starting your album with like the lead single, A, you're trying to say like, no, the rest of the album is going to hold up to this lead single. We're not like selling you false promises here.
Yes.
And it speaks to that like intent of cohesion that came through, thankfully. So yeah, Chain On featuring JPEG Mafia is just like classic JPEG, just like throwing bars down. Really good.
Really like that track.
Count On Me, you get a hint of Brockhampton just like kind of being themselves, acting as their own like group here. And you have a pretty like decent sort of like, you know, experimental-ish trap thing going on. Not too special, but doesn't like deflate the album at all. It's still keeping it going. Mm-hmm. Leads it really nicely to Bankroll, which might be one of my favorite songs on the album, just because it has so much dexterity going on. Make a run at the Boston bomb. I'm the one, you're the one she wants. When I love me like when we're done. With a volume, ring alarm. Hands on my neck, it's a charm. Got passion, no call allowed. Don't tell me so they settle down. I wear it out like a hand-me-down. Don't say I'm too big, but yeah. Man, my head big is falling off. By fit, no problem. Make it fit like nuts and bolts. One nut that I'm old enough. Your ex ain't a minimum. Baby, run with some bigger dunce. Baby, run with some bigger dunce.
There's so many different sounds with so many different just themes in Bankroll that make it such an amazing track. A song with ASAP Rocky, ASAP Ferg, I'm like, okay, this can go one of two ways. It's either be amazing or it can be absolute trash, and it is thankfully amazing. It is what I always say that I want more from like trap and more from rap is a more like mainstream sound. try something else, try different stuff. And it's very unique in the way it sounds. I like that track a lot.
Bankroll was so experimental for a rap song, I almost hated it. And that's how I know it's a really good experimental rap song.
Yeah, because it is different. Yeah, you have like this really big bass beat in the background and like half a trap snare in the background. Plus then you have like these just mirroring back and forth lyrics. It's for a good track. Listen to it.
Yeah, it's like industrial just sounding. Damn it. Yeah, just, it's very good. You go to The Light, and then The Light and The Light Part 2, which is The Light Part 2 is how the album ends,
yes.
Kind of gets into more of the airy ideas of existence that the album is conceptually kind of going towards.
And I like this track a lot, because this is more of like your throwback hip-hop stuff. It reminds me almost of like MF Doom style, even Mos Def style or whatnot, where you have like a keyboard in the background just going back, and it's that raw, raw sound. And
yeah.
I really enjoy that as well.
Tying the album conceptually together.
And it's cohesive,
yeah.
Which is very difficult to do.
Next, you have Windows, which is their most like performative track. It's 6 minutes long. It goes through a lot of different phases.
A lot of different sounds. This is when I'm like, this is when they started to try and have like, be hard, but be fuckboys at the same time.
Yeah. To me, it actually reminds me, especially instrumentally, kind of a very rare Gorilla song called 9/11 featuring D12. Kind of in like the backing, sort of slow bass thing that's sort of dubby, but also in that it's a long song with a lot of features. It sort of like adapts and grows over time.
Is it morphs and changes into some other stuff while it goes through it, which is good for a 6 minute rap track because you can't have it be the same thing for 6 minutes because then it's just overdone. Because most of these songs are, you know, around like the 3.5 minute mark or so, which I think is like a perfect spot for most rap songs.
Yeah. When you get into 3.5, you're even like maybe even kind of long for a lot of like contemporary rap nowadays. But again, I have no complaints about this album's length or like anything that's going. It's perfectly fine. You get songs like I'll Take You On, Old News, which are all really good. They're, again, it's comfortably trap music, maybe neo-pop.
I'll Take You On is definitely that neo-pop trap, that like fuckboy trap. If Tori Moore did a trap song, that's what I'll Take You On sounds like.
Yeah, but like these are...
But it's good. It's not saying it's bad.
Yeah, the production and instrumentation is different. It's interesting. Yes. It's like...
Nothing sounds cheap. Nothing sounds too overly produced or too manufactured. Everything is natural. Everything flows together with it.
And as we'll contrast with other albums later, things don't sound like phoned in. Like
Put a pin in that later, please.
The lyrics don't sound phoned in. The production sounds like it was thought for. These aren't these are crowd pleasers. Like people will bump these Brockhampton songs very much, but there's so much depth there. There's stuff to work with. You can't say this about a lot of artists making, you don't say this about most artists making rap or trap music these days, honestly.
No.
I think one of the other highlights near the end is Don't Shut Up the Party.
Yep, Don't Shut Up the Party. Why you gotta grab that pistol? Think about who gon' miss you. Never know what I've been through. What's the issue? Why you gotta grab that pistol? Think about who gon' miss you. Never know what they might do. Don't shoot up the party. Don't shoot up the
It's like an on the nose political song about like, you know, shootings and things happening, but still blends pretty nicely into a kind of like rap song, but still industrial in its efforts like that. I really appreciate the sound they're going for here. And then after that, you get through Dear Lord, The Light Part 2, and that's kind of where the album sort of lands, so to speak. And you get to a place where the members are very reflective. They're thinking about like the ways they exist as people and how they're perceived as people and how like that can like be negatively impacted onto them. But also thinking about like, you know, the light and morality and being led towards those things. So again, like with Brockhampton, definitionally making anything cohesive is going to be difficult because there's just so much going on. But it has been the best version of my hopes of Brockhampton from like the Saturation era in those days, that they would over time with every consecutive album get more cohesive with their sound and what they're actually trying to be like. And so I think for sure this is their most cohesive one. And I think another issue with some Brockhampton albums is longevity. And sometimes I think Brockhampton albums, like they sound kind of good, but none of the songs really like stick or last.
No, that's the thing. And like with me, it's they have so many ideas, they have so many other things going on that I'll like one or two tracks usually, and the rest of it gets a little too off on the nose for me, a little too just out there for me. This entire album to me, for, at least for me, this is my favorite Brockhampton album by far.
Yeah,
by
far. It's definitely up there for me. I like a bunch of associated different random Brockhampton things, but this is a really good album. Overall, really happy with it. And there are some rumors. I mean, I don't know what to believe anymore whenever Brockhampton releases an album because they usually say things that are never true and make sense. I remember they ended one album by teasing some projects and singles that they yep. like were going to half do, but then decide to scrap altogether. But there are say that they're doing the thing where like, oh, maybe we retire after this. We may do one more album after this and retire.
Yeah.
We'll see. Whatever. But like they're progressing very nicely as a band and they're on track to continue doing so.
Yeah. That's the thing with them is they are continuously progressing further and further and they're continually improving every album. And that's always what we don't want you to, we don't expect everybody to be an amazing artist or not, but stay within true to yourselves and figure out what works as a group. If you're a group, try out different ideas, try out different things and see what sticks together as cohesive and then run with that basically. And this is one of my favorite rap albums of the year so far, by far. Very good work.
Quite good. Can't go wrong with Danny Brown in the beginning, though.
That's yeah, absolutely. No, you start with Danny Brown. That's a good foot to be off of. So, yeah.
So arbitrary.
Oh my God, I forgot about the arbitrary scale.
The arbitrary scale this week. As folks know, every week on Audioface, we do an arbitrary scale to point out the fact that when most people are reviewing albums, they assign a score to them. It's usually kind of arbitrary and mm-hmm. doesn't really tie the whole thing. So we just lean in. We're a lean-in podcast. And so this week, the arbitrary scale is questionable Venmo history based off of Matt Gaetz and all the stuff happening
Pizza
over
Gaetz.
There. Yeah, is. Again, I'm not going to go too far into it, but like, there's a lot of suspicious things going on with Matt Gaetz's Venmo history. But also, everyone's Venmo history, given the wrong context, can look very sus.
Yes.
So this is going to be when you're sending a thing to Venmo and the message are just like different emojis for like explosions and things. It's like you can't tell whether it was like drugs or sex or just like someone who got bored with typing in the emojis. But that transaction is there. You know, it's very ambiguous.
This is when somebody likes your transaction of a thumbs up. Because they don't know. It's just too ambiguous and everything. You don't know if it's good or bad, but someone randomly likes it and you're like, oh no.
Is it someone who is part of the transaction or someone who's scrolling through your
profile? No, someone who's scrolling through your feed, and likes it and likes the thumbs up. That's what this album is. Take that what you will.
I hope people leave with this album review with even more of a sense of how we feel about the album than when they came in.
Yes.
That's the point of the arbitrary scale.
Moving on from that, we're going into normal news stories now. If you know the Fyre Festival fiasco of disaster that happened a few years back, there is a very viral tweet of a cheese sandwich that was just the most pathetic cheese sandwich you've ever seen in your life. I don't know if you can consider it a cheese sandwich. It's like a piece of bread, two cheese slices on one side that definitely don't look cooked and probably are about like 8 years old at some point. And you got some lettuce and tomatoes that definitely do not look edible to eat.
Yeah, like the pieces of bread that are like the kind of soggy pieces of wheat bread that have been sitting in your high school's cafeteria in the back for the past like 2 weeks with a little bit of condensation from the refrigerator, so it's just not quite bread still.
God.
Yeah, it's one of those things. But someone took a picture of that.
Yes.
And the tweet went viral. But now the tweet is basically has the original image and ownership, and he's going to try to sell the tweet for a set of money.
I think $80,000 he wants to get.
Yeah.
But the sad thing, the reason why he's trying to sell it is because he needs it for his medical expenses. So I guess like, yeah, he saw the owner. I'm trying to find.
Yeah, it says. Lastly, the proceeds of the sale will be going towards a good cause. My medical expenses for daily dialysis and pending kidney transplant. So it's like, basically, we've talked about NFTs and the many pros and the many cons of like the entire thing. And generally, we come on the side of this isn't something that is going to affect like everyday people's interaction with music. It's just kind of like.
It's a very niche thing.
It's like trading cards for very, very rich people. It's just like things that kind of show off, but like you don't really have a. It's like there's just not a lot of value to it. But I mean, like the other thing, not to get like too hashtag no politics about this, is that this is the country where you have to sell meaningless internet tokens of like pictures of other people scamming large groups of people in order to pay to live. That's what this is. Like, we can go into, oh, he needs the money for his like kidney dialysis treatment, with pay to live. That's what it is. Like, pay to live, because we live in a country that doesn't have a healthcare system that just assumes like people wanting to live, they can, is something that happens. So, this is a point that Taylor Lorenz from the New York Times pointed out. It's basically saying that the tweet was the most American thing she's ever read. It's really sad.
And then,
Yeah, moving on. Bass Nectar, an EDM artist, is being sued over sexual abuse and trafficking. This happens in music way too much.
Fucking often, man.
Yeah. Two women say they were groomed and raped by the EDM musician while underage. And according to legal documents obtained by TMZ, starting in 2012, Ashton contacted both victims via direct message on social media and made it clear he was pursuing a sexual relationship. The suit claims that he asked them to watch the film American Beauty, a movie about a middle-aged man played by alleged sexual predator Kevin Spacey, who has sex with his daughter's high school classmate, and described it as a, quote, a movie about an older man having a relationship with a young girl, end quote.
Whoa.
So yeah, that's kind of just like the beginning. The attorney for Bass Nectar has said these outrageous claims, which were clearly designed for the media rather than for the courts, are completely without merit, and we eagerly look forward to proving so. So like... as was made extra clear recently, this is just like a cycle of things that happen where like people try to come forward with these things and they try to like scare and intimidate people out from trying to speak, coming forward. We're going to talk about this on Audioface as long as it continues happening until people kind of get the message that something fundamentally has to change with like the way people are held accountable with this. Moving on.
We have second album review. We have Alive by Kid Ink. It is 13 songs, 41 minutes long. And it's a thing.
We listened to it, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
I'm kind of calling this one kind of late. But like,
that, you know, fair play, because I only got through about 4 songs. Like, I already listened to this shit, I guess. So
I got through enough of it to give a critique, but I'll tell you what it is. That this album is a very inconsistent piece of work from a very mediocre artist.
Yes.
And, like, inconsistent means it's not like, oh, there are some peaks of genius in here followed by some just, like, cratty moments. It's like, crud, meh, crud, meh, crud, meh. And, like, every other song is like, I can't listen to this. I can almost listen to this if it's in the background and I have to.
And this is the issue with your generic, over-manufactured, hastily prepared trap, where it's just... slapped it, looks like the Fire Festival. It is hastily prepared, I swear. And it looks like the Fire Festival cheese sandwich, where it's just like slapped on there. You go to cafeteria food, slam it down, pop it up, and it's passable. I guess it's edible to the main most population, but you look at it and you're like, what the fuck am I eating? What am I eating? What are my ears eating? What are they listening to? What are they digesting right now? What is this crap? Why am I just...
those are calories on a plate. These are sounds being transmitted to your ear. Like,
can I get those sounds back? No, unfortunately.
You can't get the time back.
Nope.
Yeah, it depresses me to even think we have to begin reviewing this album. Like, New New and Night and Day and Red Light are just, like, the same kind of songs.
Three songs!
I swear to God!
Because I just listened to it, like, am I if we really listen to the same song over and over again? I guess Red Light out of those one might be the better one-ish, but that's one of those meh... trap songs are like, it's catchy, but it's nothing spectacular. Red light, district, bright enough to get right, twisted, tell her about a blunt tight, lipstick, can't slow it down, came up too quick, isn't this too, whoa, 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 hollering at the moon, whoa, 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 living in a dream, but my eyes ain't closed. I've heard this from Future since like 2014, so.
I was gonna say, like, in 2013, this would have sounded bland. So how do you think we're coming to it in 2021? It's just like, it's unbearable.
It really is.
Again, the few things this album has going for it is that without the bonus tracks, it's 30 minutes.
Yep.
So it's kind of
I did not even touch the bonus tracks, so whatever.
Bonus tracks are better. Bonus tracks are much better, actually.
That's pretty sad.
Here's the thing. Again, better is not by saying like, oh, we found a hint of like genius in this like, it's not like good at all.
It's just passable. Like that food won't give you explosive diarrhea when you listen to it.
Yeah, like I'll venture out of the food analogies for here at this point. So I'm not too graphic to the audience. But like, Whereas the rest of the album, there are some songs where it's like, okay, I will be fine if someone puts this on, but I don't necessarily like it. I don't want it to be on for a long time. I could almost see myself wanting to play like Thickle or Look at That, but like it's not really. All of the bitches here know, babe. Thick in the leg, Sabrina. Turner, just like Tina. Let her wish tip drill. Swipe with the Visa. Tell when it's sit real. Look at that. Cause you've been on squats, heavy. Pocket with the knot, heavy. Throw it in the con. Jim, I size. Thick old thighs. Thick old that ass white. No surprise. Take your time. It's just like better. It's just better than everything else on the album, but still like not even as good as Gunna's album from last year.
Which we basically
said was like the mean, as in like the average of trap music. Like it's just perfectly mediocre. It is pristinely just plain as far as music goes. This doesn't even meet that metric. It's just so bland. And there was a time in long ago episodes of Audio Phase, because now we're old man Sean and Dan. We're talking about episodes 100 episodes ago and shit all the time.
Which
now.
Is crazy.
But like, we used to give trap albums a lot more like trying to listen to them, like trying to hear them out, but until we realized there was not much to hear out.
No.
So
because there was about a 2-year period where we would really try and dive into it, but then after that, it's the same old things are being released and released. You obviously have artists that can make trap good. We had our Brockhampton review earlier, which is that is the epitome of making very, very good rap music and trying to do something different. And this is the industry plant of hastily prepared music. And you don't listen to it. Don't waste your time.
Yeah, please don't. Usually we have picks for anything, but like, yeah, there's
fuck that. No, I don't care. The entire album.
Whole garbage. arbitrary scale, questionable Venmo history. This is someone who, when you get sent a Venmo request and it's just like incomplete, it's just marked incomplete and hasn't been responded to for about a year and a half. You're just like, you're not getting that money back.
I was going to say the same thing as when you request it and you realize like, did that guy ever pay me back? And you look, you're like, this asshole never paid me back. It's like rent money or something.
The drunk guy you met in a bar who was like having a bad time, so you called him an Uber home and he said, thank you, I'll get your Venmo. Like, I'll pay you back. I'm sorry, I lost my card. I had to get it canceled. I'll get you back. And a year and a half later, you're like, that was surge pricing. And I'm still out $70 from that incident.
Yep.
I'm never going to be a good Samaritan again. don't listen to that. Moving on. The Avalanches, a band we talked about who released a good album last year, We Will Always Love You.
Fantastic indie album. There a lot of good stuff in there.
The only tragedy really is that based on the schedule of the show, we talked about it too late and then I had to start the new year. So I haven't really even gotten to like really listen to it and enjoy it as much as I'd like to.
I have now the past maybe about month and a half, I've actually gotten to really dive into it and digest that album for
good on
you.
I've got to try it. There's so much
in that damn album. Because obviously I listened to like some of the like the MGMT track a little bit, some of the other ones like Interstellar Love and stuff. Those ones I listen to a lot because they're just playing. But then the rest of the album, like, holy crap, this scene's just amazing. But anyways.
Yeah, and so like that's the culmination of the Avalanche's nearly 20-year history, which began with Since I Left You, which was their first album that they're now releasing in deluxe reissue featuring some pretty wild remixes, including a remix from MF Doom himself, Prince Paul of De La Soul, Black Dice, Leon Vinehall, Sin Cane, and Carl Craig, among others. There's also some previously unheard demos, and there's even more samples from this album. We did a whole Avalanche's bonus episode of Audio Phase that you should check out from December of 2020, where we talked about Plunder Phonics and the idea of taking old sounds and turning them into new sounds, and how legally difficult and like how much of a time constraint that actually is. But it was something that they did to a science and to a way like I don't think anyone else has really hit and matched since I Left You. Even since that album came out, the Avalanches have used less Plunder Phonics. It's just so much work.
But, it's just too much, yeah, because that's like that funk is the same way. That's why it takes so long to make those albums.
Yeah. Have you ever had a side G to an album?
No.
Because this album G-sides. Has a side A. Well, yeah, there's gorillas, but there's a side A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H.
Maybe we want full gas. This is all the shit we did.
Yeah, this is
how about it?
This is we're not. So
it's crazy.
Check that out if you're an Avalanche fan. I hope some of this gets on streaming services or something.
Yeah, there's just a couple other things I really want to listen to, MF Doom remix and some other of the stuff that I haven't heard from that album as well.
Yes. And back on our, like, another thing we've been revisiting to this entire year, our COVID concerts. We all want to get back to them, but it seems like...
There's a couple that are slated to be a go. You're actually starting to see some festivals like, these are the headlining artists and stuff, and this is what we're slated to do, which is...
Yeah.
Interesting.
Venues, festivals like the Hollywood Amphitheater around here, Hollywood Bowl in LA, they're about to start opening and doing festivals. I think one of their first festivals was a concert for essential workers, first responders, grocery workers, that kind of deal. Bonnaroo announced that all things are a go.
Yes.
EDC, which that's in May. That's a month from now, dog. I don't know about that.
I don't know about that. Because Bonnaroo is in, I think, late summer maybe?
Yeah, mid-late summer.
Or September-ish.
Yeah.
And that most, a lot of these festivals are going around like the fall, like not the Weird Gorillaz album, but just saying like that's the time period they think that either most people get vaccinated or the cases would be going down, all that shit.
Some combination of the two, hopefully.
Exactly. So then it should be safer to go out. People will feel more comfortable and bands, artists and stuff will be safe and feel more comfortable and all that stuff as well. So... there's a bunch now that I'm seeing that have all trying to give it a go. So it's going to be interesting.
I'm not sure. Yeah, like some of these are...
I know some of them have already been moved back. Like we had, like Glastonbury is not going to be going this year. You have, I think Coachella may be pushed back until next year as well, which I could see happening.
Yeah, because there's so much logistically that still hasn't been thought of, because obviously we've been talking for the past year. Mm-hmm. We want concerts to come back very badly. We want to go back and see shows, live shows of all different sizes. But, I mean, are we going to all have to bring our, like, COVID vaccine cards and laminate those things and bring those?
Yeah, we gotta laminate those shit.
Do we have vaccine passports digitally? That creates a whole bunch of, like, tech privacy issues right there. Are we just going to trust people on their word? That's going to be a big problem when you're having a bunch of people packed in together in small venues.
Like, for athletes, we would have our... how do they call it? Your genetic passport or something like that, where we would do it for like drug testing protocols to have it within that. So I don't know if there'll be a system like that, but it was a pain in the ass to do for us. So I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Or what the idea is and everything. So
it's likely.
But we report, you decide.
Yeah. It's the sooner these concerts happen, the more messier they're going to be, because it's like they're the trial runs in this.
Yes.
On the other end of things, we're away from the bubble concerts now. We can go back.
We slowly go back to normal stuff. And I'm just hoping by the end of this year that, you know, in the fall, winter, that we'll be able to really attend more and more shows, and it'll start to get to be able to view live music again, because we both miss it dearly.
Yeah, I think one of the, some of the guesses from earlier this year were kind of small c conservative on like how soon we could have these concerts, because they were saying like late this year, early next year, and now they're kind of going like, okay, early summer, because the vaccine rollout has gone in America at least pretty well. Both of us are like half/full vaccinated now, so like that is a good deal. And like, so now that people are like feeling healthy and ready to go and immunized.
Hey, Bolsonaro or Bolsonaro, depending who you are. We're not alligators yet, so.
Actually, for the bonus part of the podcast, for members only, we're actually going to show our alligator transformation and then like start to do the first alligator music reviews podcast. It's going to be really interesting. That's why you want to pay for the podcast, folks. But I really don't know if it's too early or not, but actually, the more time passes, the less too early it is. The more time passes, it's more like, okay, like people are safe and we can be pretty safe about these things in small conditions or almost back to general population, which would be super cool. Now, moving on, last album.
Last album review, we have 97 Blossom by The Blossom. It's 6 songs, 18 minutes, so drop. It's definitely a drop. This is a fun drop. I think I've heard of The Blossom a little bit before from like so just some indie channels and stuff around, so I didn't know that they were doing a drop, but it's good. Confetti starts off like it's this blend between
bedroom
indie pop and like straight up pop, normal pop. So I call this the I forget how I worded it in my head, but it'll come to me later on. But anyways, moving on. So first track is Confetti, and that's definitely that like that bedroom poppy-ish sound of a little bit stripped back, more acoustic, very, very good female vocal voice, because they're all, females are killing it in the indie game right now.
For sure.
And it's a good start to the, little drop. After that, you have like Hardcore Happy, which is more of that still kind of similar to that acoustic, but then you get more instrumentation throughout it. So those two tracks are pretty similar through it.
Yeah, my world is burning. I've been sick of all my hurting. Yeah, I'm tired of my gender. I spent 5 days on a bender. I've been. When I'm staring at the mirror, I just want them all to like me. I just want them all to need me.
Yeah,
hardcore and it's like, but then like, yeah, so like, but the theme with hardcore happy is like halfway through, then it pops into your, I call it modernized indie. It's yeah. I'm trying to think of a pop, like where you, I'm still not
indie plus trap snare.
Yeah, because I'm not a truly a big fan of it because it's that almost like Sacred Lonely Hearts Club from Foster the People style, where you add trap to an indie track. But luckily, but good for Hardcore Happy, it's not the entire track. It's just like halfway through. It's more of an additive than being the entire, you know, title sponsor of the track. So after that, you've got Smoke featuring Matt Champion. Don't know who that is. And that sounds decent because it's then you having like more of that like spoken word style, almost like singing rap within that indie rapish song too. So that's yeah. like that. I call it modern indie. Clear,
yes, left and right. You have to almost talk about genres in different ways as it's all happening. It's
yeah, because I've been hearing this more and more. I'm still like on the fence if I like it, if I don't like it, because it's still something that's very new. It's something that's being pushed out a little bit more. It is different, which I do like. It is something that is experimental. They're trying, a few artists have been trying it out. This is probably the better, like Smoke, I think, is a good rendition of it because you've had some other artists throughout, like, and this is my critique that I had in our earlier bonus episode of State of Music Industry, where more alternative bands are doing this or more alternative sounds are doing this, but it's becoming so copycatted and cookie cutter now where it's really just spreading through a wildfire throughout the industry that I don't think it's good for.
It's just like kind of generic sound.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, there's not too much thought in it. We already had like experimenting with this a few years ago and I already warned about it. Like, I don't like that sound for it. But for this, it's, I think this is the better version of it.
Yeah. The, where do I go into this? You go afterwards into, the thing I was going to say to that is the counterpoint around having this new kind of thing, which I think is still kind of blossoming. We are introducing more, like modernized indie, let's say, where we're taking what pop is, which pop is just, you've done this before, but it's been a while. Pop is just popular music, but over time, what pop has sounded like
it changes all the time. It depends on
because it's pop borrows from all the other genres that are happening at that time. Exactly what you're saying. Exactly. So, now, indie is doing a similar thing that pop is doing. And of course, it makes sense because indie, bedroom pop, we're all kind of in the same like mix here, not too far away. But when you're getting those blends, which people are kind of calling for and wanting for, which is a good thing, you're getting people to like discover new genres, much the same way that an album that we reviewed. Like it was like another like indie woman EP, I think Sophia Valdez or something.
Okay. Yeah.
That was like, you know, we could
we also had like Arlo Parks and stuff earlier this year as well, but that's like, I think Arlo Parks is like the gold standard for that.
Yeah, for sure. But there's definitely just like numerous examples of bridging these things together so that people who like generally think of themselves as music listeners only to pop then discover these new things.
Yeah, it's a gateway drug into the world of indie and other artists and stuff. Like, after Smoke, you have Shapeshifter, which is like your stereotypical indie song of 2021, where it's like a throwback sound, like a Pale Waves, B2B, Phoebe Bridgers style of like throwing it back to the 90s-ish standard early aughts. indie sound, which is fine.
Yeah, not very synthy, very guitar focused.
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice. Shapeshifter and Black Eye specifically lyrically are very deep kind of songs touching on like issues of like identity and like expressing that and having that. It's all very good.
Yeah. I like this. It's the more I listen to this EP, the more I enjoy it. The first listen I had, or drop, I should say, the more I listen, the first listen I had, I was like, I'm still on the fence in it. The more I understand it, the more I grow to like it, which is good. So saying something like within the indie head in me is trying to figure out what this sound can do within an indie context. But I like it because I like the parts where it's not every song is the same bloody thing. And I think that's the issue I'm having with a lot of alternative sounds. Because like after Shapeshifter, you have Black Eye, which is a slowed down track. And you have Cloves at the end, which
Cloves at the end kind of returns to that. You're coming back to modernized pop sounds. But it's not at all over-offensive.
No, it's not. It's kind of blending your 90s sound with your modernized indie sounds because you're doing more of that like stripped back vocals. You almost sound like you have like a Blink 182 sound with a guitar in the background and everything, but then you're adding a trap, more modernized sound into that, which is a very interesting mix because you don't hear that often. So it's very experimental, a lot of different sounds that I think if more people listen to this and get into this, there's going to be a lot more that can transform into a lot of even like different subgenres and sub things. So it's exciting for it. I like it though.
Yeah, needless to say, Blossom is blossoming for sure. And with my last moment will be like with Cloves is that it's a good balance of trying to do the modernized pop thing while keeping things with indie.
Yeah, you're doing both things a service. You're doing both things a justice for what it sounds.
Yeah, so. And it's a lot of range and exploration for six songs.
It is.
Sort of 19 minutes, which makes things like Stairs to the Pile of Shit that is Kid Ink's most recent album, it makes those stand out a little bit more.
Yeah, because you only have, you have less than 20 minutes and you do that much and we talk that long about it, but Kid Ink's album is
Kid Ink did, not counting bonuses, 10 minutes more and it was just much worse. It's way more generic, not even trying to blend these different things.
Yep.
We've talked about artists who like we didn't like when they blended and we didn't give them like the best scores. We always said, I will give you this that you tried it and it didn't land perfectly, but I saw what you did.
But we'll give you the benefit of that. I'll be like, okay, fair play, you did it. It didn't work, but good for you for trying.
Yeah, this more or less worked, especially in this small kind of format where it's experimental. She's going to grow and get better at this.
This is what you do with a drop. This is what you do with the EP. You experiment, you branch out, you try different things, see what sticks, see what you like, see what you want to improve upon, and then release whatever else comes out as an LP, and then you're good to go.
To our arbitrary scale that we do every week, because actual music scores, there's no point to them, so let's just start with that from the beginning. A questionable Venmo history from different artists. I'm going to say that this is one of those like routine things that you're like Venmoing someone for like a bill that they cover or pay for.
Yeah.
But you start to have to get creative with the emoji because you're sick of doing the same thing over and over again.
This is like doing like a music lesson or like a swim lesson or something under the table and putting the emoji, but then putting a question face next to it because you're like,
swim question mark?
Yeah, exactly.
Snowflake question mark? And speaking of bumps, we always end audio face on a fun note, and this is
it's a Kodak.
This folks is a Kodak moment. So we'll start with earlier in the week when music producer Southside had an Instagram live about last week. Basically responding to Kodak Black's Instagram live happened earlier where Kodak Black mentions Southside's girlfriend, who is City Girls rapper Young Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Lil Uzi Vert? Or is it a different City Girl? I don't know. I'm not going to get into City Girls at this point.
I don't remember. But, it was the Lil Uzi Vert.
Yeah.
I can't keep track of that bizarre love triangle.
But during that IG live video, Southside had some comments for him that we'll just like drop in right here.
You're still a bitch. We could bump too. I'll be back in Miami in a week. Pull up wherever we could bump. Don't bring no security. Bring your I'm going to bring my
We could bump, no security, we could bump. And
the whole video is just hilarious.
And
old school rap beef.
Not 24 hours later, overnight DHL shipping, Kodak Black is seen walking around in a McDonald's, a local area McDonald's in Florida. And someone's like even recording going, oh, wow, it's Kodak. Look, it's Kodak. Flurry of gunshots.
Just a barrage of gunfire. 9mm everywhere.
Yeah. That is like express delivered beef right there. You don't get that very often. That is
overnight priority mail delivered right to your doorstep in 13 hours.
Yeah. This is Amazon Prime, our workers shit in the trucks before the packages get to you, kind of speed right here. This is like, you don't see rap beef like this anymore, honestly.
You don't.
Usually it's just like Instagram this bullshit. This is
clean, wholesome rap beef. It's been a minute. I just can't wait for somebody
to make additives.
No additives. Like, I want like a rap beef music video, and then next thing you know, like a drive-by happens. Like that's when we know we've gone back.
Yeah.
We've gone back to our ways.
When like Kodak Black is doing his diss record response and things, going like, yeah, Southside couldn't do this in the middle of shooting a video, like it gets like shut up. that's when we will have really gone back to the roaring 20s. But this has been an episode of Audio Face. Sean, what does it mean to play us out?
Thank you for listening to Audio Face. You can find me, SW Suarez, on all socials. You can find Dan at Dan from the Internet on Instagram, at Dan from the Web on Twitter. You can find us at Audio Face Pod on all of social media platforms. For YouTube, it is youtube.com/audiofacepod, where we post more or less daily clips. Follow the socials accounts, because then we always post stuff for it so that you know what videos are out, all that gubs. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting month of music coming up and really bonus episodes we have going for you. Yep. So make sure you're subscribed.
Late April, May.
And let people know about it so they know to come here and check it out.
Yes.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Cheers.
Toodaloo.